It now appears as if the Office of Personnel Management was hit with two major data thefts. One affected not 4 million current and former federal employees, as OPM first believed, but more like 14 million. The second theft took highly sensitive information about millions of people with security clearance, data from the so-called SF-86 forms. For what this means, if you are cleared, and for the agencies using cleared people, we welcome back cyber expert Rodney Joffe, Vice President and Fellow at Neustar. Mr. Joffe, good morning. Thanks for joining me again.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's talk about the individuals, especially those with security clearance. What does this actually mean to them if, in fact, SF-86 data was taken wholesale?
Based on sort of what we're hearing and what we're seeing, it looks like that is what was taken, and it's logical given the fact that they compromised the systems. It's not a surprise that the SF-86 data is probably what was taken, but what's really important is to know who is affected. I think that it's going to be, in the end of the day, much more than the 14 million. What you certainly have are the 4 million government employees that they talked about originally. You also have the federal defense contractors, not just those that are cleared, but anyone who's ever applied. The process of applying for a job, you also go through the process of entering your information in something called EQIP. So if you've ever made use of EQIP, EQIP, which is part of the OPM website, your information is probably within that database. What I suggest that people do, though, is think through what actually happened. If you go to the GSA or the OPM website, the SF-86 is available for you to download. It's a public form. If you download that form, and as you said last week, so it's over 120 pages, many of those forms are actually instructions. But if you look through the forms that you entered, you're going to just remind yourself of what you provided. Besides your name and address and your history and your living history, it's all of your relatives. So the larger your family, the more the number of people that will be affected. Because when you provided your family information, you provided their names, their full names, maiden names, dates of birth, places of birth. I think in many cases, social security numbers, if they were permanent residents, there's some original I-94 type data that was provided. You're going to have to look at that. And if you think the average person has obviously a mother, father, probably brother, sister, so maybe at least five or six names per employee. So now you're talking about a much larger number. Unfortunately, it's also going to include people like members of Congress and cabinet ministers. So no one has been left out of this. If you ever use the EQIP system, you're in there. So that's the first thing. Make sure you cover everyone. I've seen no mention of OPM now allowing for coverage for the monitoring for any of those secondary or tertiary people who might have been affected. So first of all, make sure that your relatives and friends know that this it's probable that their information was taken, and ask them to begin monitoring for their records and for locking their accounts and getting PINs and so on. The next thing is to hope for the best but prepare for the worst. So assume that there's going to be a problem. One of the things we've seen in the past is that things tend to get worse. We're seeing that already. First of all, OPM said that it was just the employee database with credit information. Then on Friday, we heard that it was the security information. There's probably going to be more behind that. So prepare for the worst. Assume that your information is out there. And now you actually deal with the thing that I'm most concerned about, which is how the data is going to be used, what's going to happen with that data. It's unlikely, as I said last week, that it's only going to be or even at all will be used for credit issues. I believe it's probably going to be used for some form of manipulation or some form of coercion of government contractors or government employees or even their relatives. So you think back to the field interviews that they actually conducted as part of a clearance process, things that may have been said where you were assured that your information would not be made public, wouldn't be shared with employees or friends. That kind of information is also probably in that database. So those are the things you need to think about now. And what I think the government has to do is, besides offering to protect your information, to provide credit monitoring, what the government needs to do now from a national security point of view is to think about how they encourage employees and contractors to report any contacts where it looks like there may be some form of coercion or that information is being used. how they now help those employees live with the impact of very, very personal information being shared with employees or publicly or with it being threatened.
Let me ask you this. Now, everyone in the CIA, presumably, or everyone who's in the field working in the intelligence apparatus at the CIA, you would presume has clearance. So does this mean that every CIA officer, who many, including those that have to remain secret, could be potentially revealed?
So I'm not sure. The CIA and some of the National Clandestine Service, some of those processes are really old school. There have been times where you've been required to actually provide that information on paper rather than actually using the ECRIP system. With a bit of luck, there are going to be some segments like the CIA and like parts of DIA, but those that are associated with NCS, I guess there's always a hope that they did it old school and they didn't submit their information online.
And a lot of the people affected could be contractors, because many of the contractor jobs also require clearance, not just federal jobs, and they would use the same form, correct?
Yes. As I said, it's not just the contractors who work directly for the government, but even those who work for defense contractors. I think I saw a report about 2 years ago, and I think there's an annual report that comes from OPM that identifies how many people have clearance of some kind. And the last number that I saw was, you know, well over 1 million people. So, you know, the 4 million people probably include all employees, not all of whom applied for clearances, but I know there are over 1 million, probably 1.5 million that have clearances of some kind currently. Now, remember, this is also historical. The fact that you may no longer have a clearance, it doesn't mean that you're safe. This is going to probably go back many, many, many years, because the OPM database retains that information for a significant period of time.
We're speaking with Rodney Joffe. He's vice president and fellow at Neustar and cybersecurity expert. And so moving from the individual to the government agency level, what can they do at this point if they have cleared employees or they're working with cleared contractors? Are there any steps at this point they can take to protect those people other than the credit monitoring that OPM is offering to some of the people?
I think the only thing that I can think of, and obviously I'm not advocating for anyone doing anything, I don't represent the government in any way, but I'm pretty sure that OPM is now probably working really hard to think through this. What I think all of those agencies need to do is just to begin to think through how they would go about contacting all of the employees, current and past, and being able to share with them in a reasonably useful way the directions that come back from OPM in terms of what to do. But if I was the head of one of those agencies, I'd now be thinking about the impact on my agency and its ability to do business, knowing that this information has been compromised. Not just that you're going to be dealing with the credit effects of employees who may have accounts that are financial accounts that are damaged, but also how you deal with it from the intelligence point of view. I don't know that there's going to be a sudden, you know, piece of information this afternoon that goes to the various agencies and says, here's the solution, here's what you do with your employees. I think it's going to take time for them to work out what they want to do. And in the meantime, people are going to be really susceptible to pressure.
Now, going forward, what are some of the cyber practices that agency, the CIOs and the CTOs can implement to maybe get a little ahead of this so that it doesn't happen, or they can know more clearly when it is happening to try to limit the damage? There's this cyber sprint that has been launched by the federal CIO, Tony Scott, but it seems a little late at this point to launch that.
Certainly for this group of information, I think that one is done. You know, stick a fork in this problem. It's the data's out there, and you really can't put it back in. Going forward, I think it's just a good reminder that there are best practices, and hopefully most of the agencies are following best practices. Certainly now with the sprint, let's hope that in 30 days that is happening. It's not going to be doable in 30 days. If you go back and even look at the NIST framework, just at that, there are like 98 or 100 things that should be done. Some of those are going to have enormous expenses related to them. Some of them may be almost impossible to do because of legacy systems. But at the end of the day, what I've said before and what I'm going to say again now is, no matter how good we are, no matter how good a job we do, private sector and public sector, At the end of the day, the adversary is as good as we are, except that they're not limited by the kind of moral compass that we're stuck with. They are probably going to find their ways in through things like zero days or through social engineering. So I don't know that there's a lot that can be done. I think the one thing that I would push for now is that employees really get to understand the impact of doing things like violating rules, like bringing CDs in or bringing thumb drives in or going to websites or trying to find a way around the system. The things that are put in place, the processes that are put in place to stop compromises really do matter. And employees who spend their lives trying to find a way around it because it's inconvenient need to stop and think about the impact. That's probably how this happened.
And do you imagine, again, we don't know for certain, but do you imagine now that certain elements in the government are really working to try to trace what actually happened? Because, I mean, you know, they couldn't extradite Edward Snowden. He's out of reach. But maybe some of these people are within reach from a cyber sense.
I have no doubt that the actual knowledge of this has existed within the government for many months. This didn't just get discovered last week. There've been some of the statements have been that it was found in April and then it was found in December. I'm pretty sure that there's been an all-out effort to identify who's behind it. And knowing the way that this works, the chances are that there's probably a 95 or 98% attribution confirmation already as to who was behind it. It's unlikely, looking at the way this was handled from the data point of view, it's unlikely that at this stage you're going to be able to get the data back into the U.S. It's probably done by an adversary from outside a nation state, and that data is not going to, and the data is not going to come back. It's already spread. So that damage is done.
Rodney Jaffe is a senior vice president and fellow at Neustar and cybersecurity expert. Thanks so much for joining me.